Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go now.
Series win against the Angels, a series win against the Orioles, and the M's opened their series against the A's with a win 8-6 last night. Thanks to a big home run from Julio Rodriguez, a nice two RBI triple, maybe an inside the park home run from Cal Raleigh. Here to talk about what we've seen from this Mariners team, it's Shannon Dreyer. As a reminder, our conversation with Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer is powered by Pacific Lamp and Supply. Shannon, how's it going?
It's going. How are you guys doing?
We're well. I mean, Bump and myself have been making some sports bets. Only one was real, where he's taken Cal Raleigh to get a home run, and I'm taking Julio. And I got to say, we're both kind of winning, Shannon. It feels nice. These two have been producing at such a nice clip for this team.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're happy they can provide that kind of joy for you.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Everybody wins, and that's, you know, good on them.
Shannon, we saw Logan last night go 6 innings, 4 earned runs, 3 Ks. Not the outing that we're used to seeing from him. But thankfully, he had the offense to back him up. What did you see out of Logan? Why did he struggle a bit yesterday?
You know what? I'm going to be honest. Yesterday was my day off, so I wasn't watching it too closely. And I also wasn't watching it too closely because it was Logan Gilbert. And when I'm watching Logan Gilbert on a day off, the first thing I look for is, well, once he gets a hit, gives up a hit, then I can go on with my business. If he doesn't give up a hit, it's must watch, must see what happens. And then the other thing is that if anything is wrong, I'm not going to worry about it because he's going to fix it. He's too good. He works too hard. The little bit that I saw last night, it looked like he just didn't have command of the slider that he had in the past, and so they were starting to tee off on the fastball a little bit. He did go to his secondaries more. I think he used the most of his curveball that he had used to date, but I think he was just a tick off and wasn't able to make the adjustment in the game, as we were able to see him do so many times so far this year.
How do you like his case to be an all-star for the Mariners this year? Logan, that is.
I think absolutely. I mean, he's among league leaders in so many different categories in pitching. I don't see why he wouldn't be. I mean, not just as a representative, as one of the best players on the Mariners, but one of the best starters in the league. And I also think that, you know, you want to put those young players forward, and you talk to people around baseball and they realize that he's different level, that he has got the potential, you know, to be a superstar as a starting pitcher and somebody that not just people in the Seattle area talk about for a long time. So I think that, you know, they would be smart to get more Logan Gilberts, more Julio Rodriguez's involved in the game.
Stace and I have been trying to figure out, like, who can we believe in this lineup? Who can we trust? Well, we're learning we can trust Rodriguez. Winker's coming around. Mm-hmm. Suarez, hit or miss. He's been exactly who we thought he was. Can we trust Cal Raleigh? I'm starting to buy in. I'm starting to believe. I'm going to buy some real estate. What are your thoughts, Shannon?
I think you can. And, I mean, I guess I'm a little biased. I've been a big fan of his for a long time. I love catchers in general and just everything that they take on and find that what they do is just so interesting. They are a part of just about everything that happens in a game. And if you've got a catcher that can hit, that's huge. And I don't think people understand that catchers over the last few years have been among the lowest averages and lowest offensive numbers at any position. And it's because they have so much more that they have to take care of. I talked to Cal the other day and asked what a normal day looks like for him. And I asked, you start preparing when you're at home? And he said he doesn't like to take stuff home. You shouldn't. But yeah, he does. He's got to, you know, get out the scouting reports and do that early in the day before he even is one of the first to get to the ballpark. There's a lot that they have to take on. But as far as what we are seeing with his offense, I kept an eye on his numbers throughout his minor league career. And of course he comes up and he has the initial struggle, and I'm not even going to count last year because that was just an odd situation to come up and then all of a sudden find the team in a different situation where they couldn't play him because they were trying to make it to the postseason. But he had that struggle early on, and you knew it was in there because you saw it and because too many people said, and I'm not talking just an organization, out of organization as well, this guy should at least be an average hitter for a catcher. Well, he's exceeded that, and he's made some changes. He's shortened up at the plate. He kind of focused in on the fastball for a little while. Now we're starting to see him hit some other stuff as well. He's smart. He knows what he is at the plate. And we had Dan Wilson on the broadcast. He's with us every Tuesday for a couple of innings. And, of course, Dan Ketcher was also catching coordinator and also working in just various capacities. He's traveled throughout the minor leagues for years now. And I asked if what we are seeing right now from Cal is what, as a hitter, was what he was in the minor leagues. And he said yes, and it's actually better because of the adjustments that he is making right now. And if he didn't follow Cal in the minor leagues, he was a decent hitter. He wasn't a guy that was going to strike out very much. He had ridiculous power, and he would go on streaks where he hit a lot of home runs in a short amount of time. And I think that we're seeing that now with the shot at seeing more consistency from him. And I think he's a good one to buy in on because I think a lot of adjustments have already been made to him, and he's making adjustments right along with the pitchers.
Were you at all surprised to see that this team didn't call up Jared Kelnick?
No, I was glad to see it. You know, there's a commitment to getting him what he needs. And it's funny because Cal Raleigh kind of plays into that a little bit, too, in that when the season started and we talked about the nasty pitching that everybody was seeing and how offense was down. And we have these conversations all the time in the booth with Gary Hill and Rick and Aaron Goldsmith and Mike Blowers. And we just, you know, thought that it's absolutely impossible for young players to come up right now. The divide is just too much between the minors and the majors, between AAA and the big leagues. And it really is in terms of stuff, but what can get you through that is the experience that you have. And so when Jared struggled, I think that I was kind of buying into all young players are going to struggle mightily because of what they are seeing. But then you see Cal come up, you see Taylor Trammell come back, and they both made the adjustments relatively quickly. You see what Julio does, but he's, you know, he's Julio. He's supposed to do that. But you see Cal do it. You see Taylor Trammell do it. And, it, you know, what's the difference between them and Jared Kelnick? They've had a lot more time in the minor leagues. They know a lot more about them. They've seen a little bit more. I think they understand how to make adjustments more. They know how to control their emotions more. They know they've just seen more. And I think that experience counts for so much more. And I think the Mariners are very committed to getting Jared that experience right now. And we've said it all along. You know, he could hit a home run in every game for the next week, and that's not what they're looking at. They're looking at how he handles situations. Does he have a good two-strike approach? What is he, you know, is he able to handle every type of pitch? Is he thinking along with the pitchers? Is he guessing? You know, how is he handling each and every at-bat? Because, you know, he is far too big a talent, and that is all still in there, but you've got to bring it up right, and they're committed to that right now.
Shannon, a couple weeks ago, the M's were struggling, and people were asking, man, what is Service doing? Like, they're talking about him like it was all his fault. But last 10 games, these guys are 8-2, a three-game win streak, identical to the Houston Astros. How much credit should Service get for this this run they're on right now?
I think any time, and we talk about this a lot, that so much is not in the manager's hands anymore. I mean, a lot of it is roster. A lot of things are dictated. This isn't just the Mariners. This is most clubs right now. A lot is dictated from upstairs and how they want to approach things. Sometimes it's lineup. Sometimes it's who you use in certain situations. A lot of that happens on, and it's turned out that, you know, the manager has been much more of a people manager in recent years for many clubs. But I think that any time you have a team that is facing major adversity, that's when the manager comes into play, and that's when they are most valuable. And when you look at the adversity that this team has faced and the losses that they have had player-wise, no Mitch Haniger, no Kyle Lewis, now no Ty France, mm-hmm. I think the manager in that situation especially deserves credit.
Did you hear any updates? Do we have any updates on a couple of those bigger injuries? I know with Taylor Trammell, it's such a bummer because he was coming along so nicely and had had such a nice stint in his second time with this club. And, of course, he has that injury. Shannon, I got to say, I was a little nervous yesterday hearing Jerry DePoto's answer about Ty France's timeline and that, yeah, we don't really have a big timeline right now.
Yeah, I can't make heads or tails of that because we're hearing different things in all different places right now. And the only thing that I can do is that when I get to the park early is see what those guys are doing. Are they on the field? Has he picked up a bat yet? You know, we did this homestand has been very revealing. We saw so much more from both Kyle Lewis and Mitch Haniger than we did before we left and actually had the opportunity to talk to both. So you get a little bit of a better picture there. But with Ty, haven't seen him out on the field yet. You know, we understand that he's swinging right-handed, but that's not going to help things. It's going to be, you know, how he manages that left hand and, you know, has had a bat in his hand but not swung it, that kind of thing. So we're just not to a point where I can really even gauge that. But was a little bit surprised to hear from what we heard from DePoto, because we had been hearing kind of more positive things, from Scott Servais and Ty France himself. So I do not know what is up with that, and we'll have to find out some more.
Any idea why the Mariners chose to go with JP suspension first? I thought they would go with Winker, the longer suspension. Any idea? Were they forced into it? How does that work?
I have no idea if that was once it is a suspension, I believe it's in the player's hand, and that's something that they handle more with their agent. And I don't know if JP was the first one to jump on this and let's get this out of the way, or if there was a strategy that, we're playing the A's right now and we can better afford to lose JP at this point. Julio is going to be 2 games max, so I think that you can, at that point, it's like a day off. It'll be okay. Hopefully that gets reduced to 1, if not none. And then Winker, he's really been bonus of late, and I hate to see him miss any time, because for him, you want him in a groove. You want him to continue to see live pitching. That's the one that I think is going to hurt the most, just because of where he's at and the potential for a setback with him. So I don't know how that unfolded. I think it's good timing. I think that Crawford could use a little bit of a break. He has struggled mightily in the month of June. We were starting to see a couple of hits at the end, but you saw the frustration coming out in a number of plate appearances with him. And he's also a guy that has seemed to wear down a little bit at the end of the season. So, maybe this will be a little bit of a bonus if they can pick up the wins with him out. He gets refreshed. He has the opportunity to get in the cage, do some extra work, take a look at what he's doing. And he was there at early batting practice yesterday doing exactly that. I think there's a chance that you can make the most of it, and this is probably not a bad place to lose them when you're going up against the A's.
We've still got to wait just a couple days for George Kirby's next start, but how do you think he can bounce back from what was a career worst?
He's a lot like Logan. I'm not worrying too much. He doesn't have the experience that Logan has. What really kind of intrigued me after his outing was he wasn't too worried about it. I think he was so far off that he just kind of shook his head. He knew what was wrong. He wasn't overwhelmed by the fact that that was his worst start. I think he put it behind him before the media even talked to him. And so along those lines, he's already got a fairly solid body of work. And I think that's something that he can lean back against. But I am interested to see it, because we haven't really seen, or there hasn't been a situation where he has needed to bounce back like that.
Shannon, the bottom of the lineup has been producing as of late. That has to be the formula going forward, especially when you're going to miss these guys like JP, Winker, and Julio coming up.
Yeah, and we've seen that throughout the season. I mean, this team does seem to go when the bottom of the lineup is going, and it's kind of fun to watch. That's where you kind of see a little bit more of the old school baseball, where you've got the guys like Dylan Moore and Sam Haggerty who can do a little bit of running. And it's funny because they're kind of different players when they're in different spots, but they know what to do there. We saw Sam Haggerty drop that bunt the other day. Do we see more of that? Scott Servais had said that they had talked to him about, with his speed, we would like to see more of that. And that'll be kind of fun to watch. If that's the case, I think it's also helped a little bit. He hasn't really, sometimes he's been in the lower three, sometimes lower four, but Cal Raleigh has been down there as well, which has just helped lengthen the lineup and put a little bit more of a threat down there. So good to see. Obviously you want your guys who are out to get back, but if they play their game, and I think that they're seeing that, and I think being forced to kind of scratch and claw a little bit right now, you can't just sit back and wait for the 3-run home run right now. You've got to make things happen, and they do have a number of guys on this roster that can do that.
Well, let's hope we see plenty of it during this series. They really need it. She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Shannon, thanks so much.
Yeah, and boo college football. That's all I have to say.
Oh, Shannon, one last thing. Please text us immediately if you see a clubhouse puppy. Don't forget, this is our beat right now.
That's right. And I tried to find Jack Mossman. He was the one I was told would be, and he was not there the last. But, yes, I am on this, Stacey.
Good.
You will be the first to know.
Oh, I love it, Shannon. Thanks so much for taking
it. And I think you should get naming rights, too, now that I think about it.
I think so, too. Let Scott know. I'm sure he would be so down for that. I know he would. She is Shannon.
We'll get that on his desk.
I know. She is Shannon Dreher, Mariners insider, one of our all-time favorites. Thanks so much, Shannon. This hour, Bump and Stacey, is brought to you by Advanced Air Restoration. Let's get to 4 Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Pac-12 update I'm going to get to in 15 minutes. First, though, first down. Do you see the Pac-12 being able to survive the transformation happening right now?
Survive? What does survive look like to us? That's the question, right? Surviving to me means that the Pac-12 will still be a Power 5. With the moves that have been made so far, I don't see that happening. But how do they stay relevant? You got to go and get some guys. You got to get BYU. You got to get Texas Tech. You got to get Boise State. Even though you're not going to have the same appeal that you used to have, for you to even stay relevant, you have to make a move. Now, if UW and Oregon go, then it's going to be that much harder. I think after this year, or in 2024, the Pac-12 will not be a Power 5 school anymore unless they make a big splash and these other teams start to get better recruits and play better football. It is going to be tough. The Pac-12 will still be around potentially, but it will never have the same type of shine it used to have.
Second down. All right, Trayvon Williams is going to help teach NIL classes at Texas A&M. How valuable will this class be?
Extremely valuable. We are entering a phase in college football where these young men are going to get paid more than some professional athletes. I just mentioned the guy from Miami that's going to get paid $9 million. But what do you do with that money? And then how do you market yourself? Even the guy who's not going to get $9 million, how do I get $100,000? How do I get $250,000? Like, this is the game now, and you have to be taught the game because this generation is the first generation to ever go through this. So this first wave of athletes, they went through this thing blind. Like, I don't know. I'm just going to show up. You're going to give me money, I'll take it. But now how do you leverage this situation? I think that's going to be extremely important for the athletes and for these agents, these future agents, to learn how to leverage NIL deals.
I'll also say that I think what I've seen in terms of criticism from people as well, that's a lot of money to give someone. What if people are irresponsible? I mean, if someone's getting money from their names, images, and likeness because of their talent, because of what they bring a program, by the way, and what they bring a multi-billion dollar industry that is the NCAA, I mean, you might disagree with me. You might love amateurism and think that it maintains college football in its best possible form. I think that athletes should be paid or compensated in some way for just the direction that college football especially has moved. All of that being said, like learning how to manage money is important for anyone, not just college athletes getting this money. Yes. Like, think of the first check you got. You know what I did with the check I ever got?
Blew it.
It was $425. I was a waitress. I went to the mall and spent it all.
Oh, yeah. My first check was like $250.
I felt like a millionaire.
Oh, I was balling. I went and ate burritos for 3 days straight.
Got
it. Good to go.
I was like, so this is what it's like. This is what it's like. A week later, I'm like, wow, that was
like
stupid.
Being rich.
Exactly. Third down. Who are the top three veteran rookie wide receiver combos in 2021?
Veteran wide receiver combos. It's important to have both, right? You need a duo that's going to work, but a veteran wide receiver, rookie veteran combo is even better. Number three, I have George Pickens and Chase Claypool down there in Pittsburgh. Okay. These are two big boys. One is 6'3", one is 6'4". Now it's all about the quarterback play. Cody Pickett, is he going to be the guy? Who's going to be the quarterback under center over there? I think those two have great potential. Chase Claypool says he's top three receiver in the league anyway, so he'll be matched up with him. Number two, I got Treylon Burks and Robert Woods over there in Tennessee. Burks brings that size back to the Tennessee Titans, like an A.J. Brown type of dude. And Woods is just the everything type of receiver. I can go downfield. I go across the middle. I got the speed. Combine that with the run game, I think these two are going to be really good together. Number one, I got Chris Olave and Michael Thomas over there in New Orleans. Olave ran at 4.3940. He's going to stretch the field. We know Michael Thomas is a possession receiver. He's going to have over 100 catches. He's going to work underneath. Now you got a young guy who's going to stretch the field. You got Michael Thomas underneath, and I'm going to throw an Alvin Kamara over there too, who's going to just keep guys guessing. I think those two are going to be great. That's 3-2-1 right there.
How might not having Breeze affect Thomas?
Oh, yeah. It's going to affect him, but it's also going to help him because Jameis Winston is going to be like, I'm going to go to the guy who was proven, who
we
I can
know
trust.
He'll throw bombs. I mean, that year when he had, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks or whatever. I mean, he, I think, unless I'm mistaken, led the league in passing yards. Like, he was not 5,000. Afraid to throw it all over the yard. It's just sometimes not to his own receivers. That's the problem.
Correct.
When you don't throw it to your own teammates, then you're in trouble there. But, man, Michael Thomas, it's not that I've in no way have forgotten about him, but last year dealing with injury, just not really being a name, you know, that we're all watching on the radar, especially with Ja'Marr Chase taking over and Waddle having a great season, right? All these young guys really impressing. DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, obviously, part of that conversation. Debo, oh my God, so many great years for wide receivers last year that we kind of forgot about Michael Thomas and how fantastic he was the year prior.
I think he's remotivated. I think he's rejuvenated. I think he's ready to go. Now, you're right. It depends on Jameis Winston, but when we just talk about talent, in like the combination, how they can feed off each other. If done correctly, I think this is a nice little match we have here.
Fourth down. All right, Bump, now that Russell, Bobby, and the rest of the historic Super Bowl Seahawks roster is gone, who will be the pencil-in Pro Bowl player for the Hawks every year moving forward?
Now, we could easily say it's going to be DK Metcalf, right? He's been to the Pro Bowl already in 2020 at 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. I think that, yeah, he can be a Pro Bowler, but there's one guy who controls his own destiny more than DK. DK has to rely on the line, the quarterback. Quarterbacks are throwing the football. He has to make a play with the ball.
I'm trying
in the air.
To anticipate where you're
I'm
going
to go with Jordan Brooks. All Jordan All Brooks right. has to do is make these tackles, get downhill. We've seen linebackers play on poor defenses and still get selected for the Pro Bowl because they can control their own destiny. Now, they need those defensive linemen to hold up guys for them every now and then. But worst come to worst, Jordan Brooks can rally to the football and make plays, do it all on his own. Whereas DK, you got to rely on the quarterback. We don't know the quarterback situation. Eventually, I think DK is going to be a Pro Bowler every year for about 3 to 5 years. But right now, we're going to pencil in every year the next 3 or 4 years. The safe bet is Jordan Brooks.
Now, we've seen a couple Seahawks that are still on this roster, both offense and defense, make a Pro Bowl. We can count Jordan Brooks defensively unless there's another guy you want. Who's another Seahawks player that has yet to make a Pro Bowl as either a starter or alternate that you can see making a pretty good push this year?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to go with offensively. Has Noah Fant made a Pro Bowl?
I don't know.
Has Noah Fant made a Pro Bowl?
I don't think he has.
All right, I'm going Noah Fant then.
You are so high on Noah Fant this year.
I'm telling y'all, man, watch this, man. He's going to kill it.
Was he just completely dominated in camp? When you were out there, it's like everyone's talking about Noah Fant every day.
Yeah, he looked good. Everyone looks good in camp. Bro.
Yeah,
Everyone
it's hands camp. That's training camp. Hands camp.
I just look at his film, and I see the potential in this man. I think he can get it done.
All right, coming up in the timeline. Number one, it's a wonderful holiday today. Number two, one of maybe
Wait,
the most
is Canada Day.
No, one of the maybe the most uncomfortable. Another holiday. One of the maybe the most uncomfortable minor league promos I have ever heard. Curtis made us listen to it many times before the show started, and I'm just squeamish. But now you guys have to listen to it too. Number three, we have an update, a Pac-12 update on Oregon and UW, and I gotta say, I'm taking it personal. I'm taking it personally. Maybe I shouldn't, but I am.
Do it.
I am. So, again, update on UW and Oregon and the Pac-12 moves. Holiday in a very, very awkward minor league promo. It is all coming your way next in the timeline.
This is the timeline.
With Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is the timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. By the way, this hour is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. So let's get it started with an update on Oregon and UW's efforts to join the Big Ten via Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, covers college football for CBS Sports. Quote, sources, Oregon and Washington have been told by Big Ten that it is standing pat for now, waiting on a decision by Notre Dame.
Man, my ego would be a bit bruised if I was UW or Oregon. And, I mean, now everybody wants to get in the club, right? And if you've ever gone clubbing, back in my 20s, I used to go clubbing and stuff, and you can't just show up with nothing. If you got like 3 or 4 dudes with you, you're going to have to wait your turn to get into the club, right? So that's UW and Oregon. They got too many.
I feel personally hurt.
Too many fellas.
Yes,
you just got in the club.
No. I'm UW, though. First of all, yes, I did just get in the club. But also, now as UW, I feel like I'm waiting outside the club with Oregon, and we're like, wait a minute, but you said you're at capacity, but then you just let like 10 people in over here. You said you're at capacity, and the bouncer's like, sorry, man, we're at capacity.
Yeah, you're at capacity.
That's how I feel.
I feel you, and you should feel that way, because I feel like UW and Oregon have the history and the prestige and just the quality of football to get into the club. So, yeah, unfortunate for you guys. As a Washington State alum, and I'm sitting here in the Pac-12 not even trying to get into the club, I appreciate it, because I'm like, please keep these dudes in the Pac-12 so we stay relevant.
All right, breaking news here, fittingly during the timeline, the Pac-12 will explore expansion. Pac-12 Conference released a statement just a few minutes ago, quote, the Pac-12 Board of Directors met this morning and authorized the conference to explore all expansion options. The 10 university presidents and chancellors remain committed to a shared mission of academic and athletic excellence on behalf of our student athletes.
You have to, and thank you for not waiting 3-4 days to get together and figure this thing out. As soon as you heard that this was going down, you guys should have been on an email chain, a text thread, or something, and start throwing ideas out there. Go get you some other teams to replace these two. It will never be the same, but at least you're moving in the right direction.
Who should they be looking at?
BYU, Baylor, Texas Tech, try to get Houston to flip, Boise State. And then after that, you go after the San Diego States and the smaller schools. But those are the first schools you go after.
And it's time for them to swallow their pride and start inviting schools that aren't necessarily the tier one research institutes that they always seem to go for. Like, yeah, Stanford is one of the premier academic schools in the country. But if you want to survive, you got to start looking at athletics are what drive these conferences, and TV money is what drive these conferences. You cannot say that you're better than any school right now, because you were just shown that a couple schools think that they're way better than what you have to offer. So you got to make sure that you're going out there and taking a big swing. And look, you can't just limit yourself to just good football schools either. You lost one of your best basketball schools in UCLA. I think Gonzaga is a team that is worth giving a call to, even though they only participate in basketball and a few other sports at that level, at the Division I level. They don't have a football program, obviously. So it's worth giving a call to them, too.
Might adding these other schools change the minds of UW, Oregon, potentially Stanford, potentially Cal? I mean, Stanford and Cal are in this weird, unique spot, but certainly UW and Oregon have reportedly approached the Big Ten to try to join that conference, being told they're standing pat right now. But might adding those schools sway them? How does it incentivize them? Or is it just, no, we're adding safety nets for when UW and Oregon inevitably leave?
Exactly. I think UW and Oregon are like, there's nothing you could do right now unless you're pulling from the Big Ten and the SEC or power conferences like that. There's nothing you can do to make them want to stay. They're going to have to stay for them to be here long.
All right. We'll be revisiting this story throughout the day. But again, if you're just now joining us, two bits of news for you. Number one, according to CBS Sports, Oregon and UW have approached the Big Ten about joining that conference. The Big Ten has told both of those schools that they're standing pat until they hear from Notre Dame. Meanwhile, the Pac-12 has authorized expansion, so they're going to be looking at adding some additional schools there. That is the latest in the college football landscape and the shakeup in the Pac-12. Next story here in the timeline. This one's interesting. So is it Alan Benavides? Sure.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. The GM of the Giants single-A affiliate, Eugene Emeralds. Now, I'm going to pause by saying that if anyone has been to minor league games, there's like 1,000,005 promotions regularly.
They're all very bizarre.
They're all very bizarre. They're all very weird because you have to do so many promotions, not just to get people out there, but, you know, maybe you have ads that you have with people, whatever it is. This one is supposed to be about health, like, you know, prostate health, presumably. So he's saying, take me out to the ball game while receiving a prostate exam in a suite at the ballpark. And of course we have the sound. Let's take a listen.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd.
No. Oh. He says crowd.
I'm playing it again.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd.
Crowd is when you know. Crowd
something
is when
down.
You know.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
He's supposed to encourage people to get these exams, right? I don't think that's
He's able to sing while he's having it. So, I mean, it's not like the worst thing in the world, but it sounds like it's uncomfortable. So,
a little bit.
Yeah, go get checked out is the big takeaway from that one. Go get checked out. Can I play it just one more time and then we'll be done?
All right.
Please, one more time.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd.
I can't.
Oh, that's good.
All right. Next up here, July 1st, it is Bobby Bonilla Day. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day to all who observe. For anyone who doesn't know, it's the day each year Bonilla gets a check from the New York Mets for $1.19 million in deferred salary. When does it end? Not until 2035.
Living the life. Like, does he work? Like, what do you do? Are you bored, Bobby Bonilla? You get 1.1 every single year. Life is good for you. I strive to be like Bobby Bonilla when I grow up.
That's the dream. Yeah. Well, how about Stephen Cohen? So Stephen Cohen, owner of the Mets, you know, took it in stride. He said, I hope everyone is enjoying my favorite day of the year, Bobby Bonilla Day. That's one way to write a $1.1 million check. It's just like, hey, guys, guess what we did this morning?
Right.
This.
Whoever set that up, I'm thinking it's Bonilla's agent back then. I mean, that guy did his job excellent. Because Bonilla last played in 2001. This guy's getting checks for $1 million every year through 2035. Like, yeah, it's deferred salary, so he didn't get it up front, and he was due this money anyway. But, like, that's taking care of your client in a nice way.
And now, that agent's getting a piece of that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting, his 3-5%? So they're both good.
Now, if that is the worst contract in the history of sports, or certainly one of them, what are some other horrible contracts in your guys' mind? They could be recent. They could be local. They could be of teams that you follow. So it may not have to be the Seahawks. May not have to be the Mariners.
But, well, how about the Angels giving Anthony Rendon, like, 200-something million, and he's played in, I think, 100 combined games in 3 seasons? Not a good look on their part. Plus, he's swinging at Jesse Winker with
open hand slap,
broken
with his free
arm.
Hand.
Yeah,
Christian McCaffrey, man. As much as I love the dude, he got that big contract, and he's been nothing but hurt over these past few years. I think he deserved the money, but they're not getting a return on it so far.
How about now? Not worst. This is certainly not even top 10. But how about some quarterbacks here? Jared Goff, for instance.
Jamarcus Russell.
Oh. That's
it was a rookie deal, too.
Yeah, that's better than mine. That is better than mine. I would say someone like Sam Bradford, who couldn't stay healthy, but he did have some good points. That was also mostly the effect of getting in while the getting was hot before the new CBA changed those rookie deals forever. Had got something like, what, $40 million? Remember when you used to get that much money just for getting drafted
just
like early?
Sign. Here you go, buddy. You made your money in college, but now it's... It's not going to get back to that, but at least these guys are getting paid in college now. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy how the universe just tries to correct itself.
If you guys can think of any others, let me know. Maybe the worst contract you can possibly remember. All right. So we are going to get back to college ball coming up here in just a little bit before we get to that quickly. Your IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Ty France doesn't have a timeline to return from his injured elbow. Here's what Jerry DePoto had to say earlier this week with Mike Salk.
I don't really have the skill set to determine how concerned to be, but you know, I do know that he experienced a very real injury, and Ty's a very tough player. He's a tough guy. I know he's in there working his tail off, and I would suspect that we will see Ty back in the lineup before most guys would get back. That just is, again, it's his personality, and you don't change that. But you know, he did experience a pretty significant injury.
Yikes, that doesn't sound good. If you're looking for a silver lining, how about this one? Mitch Haniger, out with an ankle injury, and Kyle Lewis, still out with that concussion, recently took batting practice at T-Mobile Park. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Back to the Pac-12 shakeup. ESPN's Adam Rittenberg joins us next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Marco Gonzalez and the Mariners take on the A's tonight at 7:10 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. Back to the Pac-12 shakeup, ESPN's Adam Rittenberg joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Adam, how's it going?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're well. We really appreciate you taking the time. It has been a very hectic 24 hours for you. So I've got to ask, you are so submersed in this world. You're. I'm wondering if you saw this coming or if you were shocked by the news yesterday.
Well, judging that I was on the third hole of a golf course when I got the first check, probably, you could say shocked. I mean, you're never shocked by realignment.
Right.
It's something that's always discussed to a degree. But, you know, I think it showed both with this realignment and last year with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC that, you know, there aren't very many people looped into these discussions. They're at the highest level of university administration, and at the very end, it gets to be very active. And so that's what happened. You know, I honestly don't know if the Big Ten thought that this was going to happen when it did, because, you know, Commissioner Kevin Warren is basically on vacation in England with his wife. And so I think that obviously he knew that there were some serious discussions, but the timing of when it was going to go down the way it did on Thursday may have even been somewhat shocking to those directly involved.
Adam, we know that the Pac-12 was on the bottom of like the Power Five rankings when it comes to conferences. What do you think the perception of the conference is going to be like once this deal is done and if other schools are to follow?
Well, it doesn't help, right? I mean, these are two major brands in the Pac-12. The biggest market in the Pac-12, Los Angeles, is no longer a Pac-12 market. I mean, their media days or media day rather, in July later this month is in Hollywood, and so that's going to be awkward, right? With UCLA and USC as the anchor programs there, and so I know the Pac-12 just announced that its presidents are open to exploring expansion, whether that means some type of alliance with the Big 12 or trying to poach members straight up from another conference like the Big 12. There's obviously Mountain West schools that would love to be part of the Pac-12. It remains to be seen, but it's going to be a real challenge for Commissioner George Kliavkov, who certainly didn't see this coming until the very end as far as USC and UCLA leaving. He's had a mostly good first year, I think, but, man, ended on a real sour note on Thursday.
That's absolutely right. Adam, related to all of this, you reported less than 24 hours ago, the realignment landscape is clearly dynamic, but not expecting an immediate surge of new Big Ten members after USC and UCLA. As a league source said, quote, need to breathe. What does need to breathe mean here? Look at those media rights, look at Notre Dame. What are you kind of expecting as next steps for the Big Ten?
Right. So I think that the energy that I picked up in my reporting yesterday is that they're definitely interested in Notre Dame. That's not a surprise. But in the context of, well, all these Pac-12 schools are going to follow USC and UCLA out the door, I would pump the brakes on that a little bit, just from the sense that I think the Big Ten is extremely interested in seeing what Notre Dame is going to do now that this move has happened and arguably its biggest rival is coming to the Big Ten. Big Ten is in the midst of what will be a record television contract. It already was going to be. It will be even bigger now with those schools coming into the conference. And so I think that's where the Big Ten is focused. But there's also a component that I've been told about. You have to have a formal pitch to the conference of who you are and how you meet the Big Ten philosophy and in this area, in facilities, in student athlete welfare, in logistics, in just overall program health, university health. The Big Ten presidents do still care about academic reputation. That's why I think Washington could be a very good candidate for the Big Ten if it gets to a point where there's a real push there. But I don't think the USC and UCLA situations actually happened overnight, and I think that's why I don't know if there's going to be necessarily a rush on new membership coming into the conference. Although these things can change very, very quickly. I just get the sense in talking to Big Ten people, they want to see what Notre Dame does before they do anything else.
Adam, we all know this is motivated by money and exposure, and I feel like that's where college sports is headed, especially with the NIL deals. What do you say to the people that are frustrated and want the good old days back? I think those days are over, and you got to get with the program. And what do these smaller universities do to stay relevant during these times?
Yeah, I do agree with you that those people along, and there's a number of coaches, I'll tell you, that wish it was still 1994. Those days are over. And so this is the future. And I would add that when the Big Ten does announce its media rights agreement with USC and UCLA and who knows else in the league, it's going to be such a big number that there's going to be an even stronger desire for many to employ the athletes, because why aren't they getting more of this money? That's just crazy money going to the individual Big Ten schools. And so what do the smaller schools do? There could be tiers of the sport that emerge. I think the move yesterday signaled that you have two super conferences in the sport, both in size and in power, with the Big Ten and the SEC. What happens to those left in the Pac-12 and the Big 12 in the ACC? What happens to those at the Group of Five level? Will there be another tier of the sport? I mean, right now they're all technically in the FBS. Should there be kind of a mid-tier between those playing at the very top for national championship and those in the FCS, which is officially the next designation below the FBS? But I think there's a number of schools either that are left over that aren't going to find a home in the Big Ten or the SEC, and financially are going to fall further and further behind. Maybe it's time to be more realistic about what tier of the sport they should be playing in.
Last question here, Adam. Once again, we are speaking with ESPN's Adam Rittenberg, a senior college football reporter for ESPN. The Pac-12 announced 30 minutes ago that they would explore expansion. What kind of schools might they go after, or should they go after? And do you think that's enough to try to bolster or save the conference?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting because, you know, you could there's kind of two routes to go down. They can go after a group of five members that would love to get out of the Mountain West. Nothing against the Mountain West, but you're still making more money in the Pac-12, San Diego State, Boise State, you know, those types of schools. Or do you, you know, try to go after the Big 12 or try to create partnerships? I mean, that's the other thing here is do you try to partner up with the Big 12 and evaluate, you know, which group of schools in each league will make us collectively stronger? You know, the Big 12 is in an interesting position. They have a new commissioner who just took over a couple of days ago. They are adding four members in the 2023 season to become a 14-team league, and they're going to lose two members to the SEC. Or do you look to the ACC and to try to create some type of partnership? So I think all those options are on the table for the Pac-12, but it's a critical time. This is a league that tried to add Texas and Oklahoma once upon a time, that decided last year they really aren't going to get into the expansion game in the time being. Obviously, things have changed now with USC and UCLA on the verge of departing to the Big Ten.
He is ESPN's Adam Rittenberg. He's given us a lot to chew on with this. We're going to get to it next. But, Adam, we have to let you go because you are incredibly busy. Hopefully, you get back out there to finish your game or maybe get some rest this weekend. But we appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, guys, appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
Thanks so much. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Well, let's get to those lingering questions from those Pac-12 changes that we learned from Adam, that we learned from Guy, that we learned this morning with some additional reports to come out about the Pac-12, including expansion, and figure out what comes next.